Welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today we are delighted to have back with us virtually authors Rory O'Neill Schmidt and Rosary O'Neill. Their new book, Kate Chopin in New Orleans, is just out. If you're interested in ordering a copy, please give the Poison Pen a call or go online to our web store and we can connect you with this truly entertaining book. Now I'd like to welcome Rory and Rosary.
Thanks. We're happy to be here.
Hello. We're so thrilled. Hi, everybody.
Thank you for joining us again. For those that might not be familiar with either or both of you, you have a rather impressive resume. So before we talk about the book, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? We'll start with you, Rory.
Sure. Well, I was raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. I went to Dominican High School there, an all-Catholic girls' high school. Then I graduated and went to Fordham University, studied art history and philosophy in New York City, got a master's in art therapy, worked as an art therapist for a while, and then a PhD in art education. But I've been really curious about history, about mystery, about what people today can really connect with still, and what themes are still kind of lingering. So I'm really excited about learning more about the past and uncovering some things that not everybody knows about, because what we've learned in our research is that which is very important or sacred, people keep very close. So it's important for us just to figure out what the little crumbs are and how we can piece together the story. So that's a little bit about me. And this is my fourth book with Arcadia Publishing, my third book with my mom and co-author Rosary.
That's great. What about you, Rosary?
Right. A PhD, UCLA, nine Fulbrights. Mostly to Paris and Germany, which of course made me intrigued with New Orleans and American history and how it connects to Europe. Honored to be here again. Thrilled about having a connection with Phoenix because I have a house there along with my daughter. Love that West area. And particularly interested in women's stories and in the crumbs of their lives that lead to a full-blown
connection may have slightly. Well, we'll forge ahead. I know there's some weather issues there, so that could be affecting how things come up.
Yes, there is a hurricane headed for New Orleans right now. Learned, unfortunately.
It's never a dull moment. Well, while we kind of go ahead, what can you tell us about the book, Kate Chopin in New Orleans?
Well, this book started out as a dream. You know, my mom is a playwright, and she loves taking from history and making a drama. So she wrote a play called The Awakening. And then, you know, being a historian writer, I was curious about the truths. And sometimes the truth is more fascinating than fiction, in my perspective, because it can be so terrifying and scary. Kate Chopin, she grew up in St. Louis during the Civil War. And a lot of time my writing process, I'm a mother and I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I kept thinking about what it would be like for my daughter to be experiencing a war and what that would have been like through Kate's eyes. So a lot of time our process was looking at, you know, the realities of what was happening in St. Louis, and then looking at Kate Chopin as a child and also her relationship with her mother. Oh, she's back. Hi, Mom.
Yes. Rory was just telling us a little bit about the book. Why Kate Chopin? What inspired you to say, this is what I want to work on next as a book project?
Well, we had worked on the Edgar Degas experience in New Orleans, and that was a stunning experience because Rory and I had both lived in New Orleans and never knew Edgar Degas' mother was from New Orleans, or that he had lived here, or that he had tried to save his uncle's cotton business here. I mean, that was such a secret because of the scandal involved. So we're very interested in mystery and scandal. And we found out that Kate Chopin, the leading feminist novelist from America, I say that because I didn't know that she was anybody at any time either when I was a kid. She was a friend of Edgar Degas. So another mystery crumb. And there was even thought that she might have had a child by Edgar Degas. And it was so interesting to us that so much had not been written about her. I mean, there was like a huge blur. So we weren't the only ones who didn't know. And that got us sort of into investigating.
And what did you find as you learned more about Kate Chopin? Because there's a lot of mysteries to her and her life.
Yeah, I think something that has still haunts me is that the fact as a child, you know, she grew up and went to Sacred Heart Academy, and she was this intense intellectual, spoke three languages, German, French, and English, started writing in a journal at age 10. And she was in Louisiana for 14 years, brought journals with her. And for her first biographer referred to her journals and her writing. And for some reason, these journals have disappeared. Now, all the journals of her early years from age 10 on until through her honeymoon are still intact. And her journals after she left Louisiana are still available. But for some reason, we don't know what happened to those journals. Mm. Now, when we studied Edgar Degas' life, much of the mystery around the letters that were missing several months, some artifacts from the family were gone because when his brother abandoned the family, there was so much shame that people burned things. So we're just curious about learning that, you know, some of these, where we find the truth, maybe her journal is still out there. We hope it becomes uncovered one day. And then also, Mom, maybe talk about her house in on the bayou.
I was fortunate enough, like about 25 years ago, to visit her house and see it. And it was run by a museum of old people who were just volunteering. But that house was burnt down. It was burnt down to the ground and not able to get any kind of fire units to come out and save it. So all the mementos of her life that had been in this museum of her house had been destroyed, along with a book on the awakening that was annotated in the library with all the people who actually were participants in that story that was mysteriously disappeared. Hmm. So this homed our research in the sense that, you know, a lot of stuff wasn't there. We had more crumbs.
Yeah.
For those that might not be familiar with her big success, her scandalous novel, The Awakening, am I correct in thinking that it's kind of a romantic play? Is that correct, or the term that, so that she was basing her characters on people that may or may not have been real people in her life?
Yes, Mom, you know, actually this month is the 125th anniversary of this novel that is still celebrated today. But Mom, do you want to speak a little bit about the story she wrote on Grand Isle and in New Orleans? A lot of it, we think, was based on her own experience living in Louisiana.
It's kind of interesting in that she, part of this novel was set in a little island called Grand Isle, which was a very glamorous resort. Now, many hurricanes later, there's like two houses on this island. When you read it, you really are reading the history that evaporated. But she lived a fairly scandalous life at a time when women who left their husbands really could be lynched in the country. She had an illicit affair with a married man who was keeping her alive because her husband had malaria. I mean, she simultaneously was trying to save this husband with malaria, feed six children, and have this scandalous affair with a married neighbor, so much so that she rode through town bareback and was sometimes seen nude. I mean, she did pretty crazy things. It's amazing she wasn't lynched. Maybe only because her husband was well thought of, but anyway. And
yeah, and
even now, her relatives say they're not sure if that love affair happened. I mean, even now, people are kind of trying to patch over the story. Mm-hmm.
But his relatives, this Albert Saint-Pitier, actually, when you met with them, actually boasted about it. So they were kind of known as playboys in this big little town of like two blocks, you know, very small town. I think something we can talk about The Awakening is this is what's really put Kate Chopin now on the map. And when she wrote it, she was so excited about it. She had success writing all these short stories about Louisiana, and she had studied French literature. And she thought this coming of age novel about a woman, about a painter, about an artist would really resonate. But unfortunately, it was criticized and it was banned. And it actually killed her because we think her health quickly declined upon the failure of this novel. And she began to write less and less until she died of a brain aneurysm a few years later. So this book, after being banned, wasn't brought out until the 1960s. Mom, do you want to talk about how this book was kind of hidden and then resurrected?
Yeah, she, by the way, she had been very famous in her lifetime. And so much so, she had gone and researched what kind of books by women could get published. And she found out that these stories about women that had endings in which the women were punished for their misdeeds were fine. And she got them published in Harper's and Vogue, etc. The big change with Awakening is the woman does some things that aren't, that she's not punished for. And therefore, that story could not be accepted. You want to pick up there, Rory?
So in the 1960s, a Norwegian graduate student in America found this book off the shelf, The Awakening. I think he was studying at Harvard. Is that right, Mom? And his mother was a Norwegian educator, and he really looked at this text as a feminist novel. And in the 1960s and 70s, with the revival of the feminist movement, the celebration, he brought it to the forefront. And this he helped, along with Dr. Emily Toth and Dr. Barbara Yule's additional scholars on Chopin. And so this book that was somewhat of a failure became one of the greatest successes that she didn't actually get to live to see.
No.
One of the things that I learned, many things I learned reading your book, was that she had written so many other things, short stories and all these other things, and you'd written something that I thought was really kind of perceptive. You said, whereas most authors write first and seek publication later, Kate did the opposite. She may have been an artist, but she was also very practical about her writing career.
Yes, yeah. I would encourage anybody who wants to write to first do what she did. She did a massive research on what was likely to get published. She went to New York, she talked with people, she looked at where she could make money at this, and then she followed those leads. She wrote exquisitely, but she wrote for a market, and she was very successful at doing that.
And most people were really interested in...
Go ahead,
I was just going to say, people were really interested in Louisiana, in the mystique, in the culture, and the sensuality of the Creole living, you know, on the bayou, on the water, in the French Quarter. She did try to write about other areas, but those stories weren't as successful. But even in the, I mean, again, I mentioned the journals, even in the Missouri archives, they have her spreadsheets handwritten of what she wrote, when she wrote it, where she submitted it, what date, what the response was it accepted? So she really tackled this as a businesswoman, because she was a widow. After she left Louisiana, she went back to St. Louis, and she had to support her children. And her mother was a widow too. So I think she learned a lot from her mother and grandmother about how to make it on her own, really.
Yeah, she found that people were not interested in the Midwest. She was living after she left Louisiana after 14 years, she lived in St. Louis, but she found the stories about St. Louis weren't successful, so she didn't write about that. She found the stories about the exotic were successful, and the river was successful, and New Orleans was successful. She wrote about that, so yeah. Wise woman, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very smart on her part, and you're right, she had to support her family. I also found it fascinating that it was so scandalous when it came out, and how so many other of her fellow writers were not supportive. Like Willa Cather apparently was a big critic of it. And I'm thinking in many ways they were writing similar kinds of books.
Right. Well, the jealousy in the market, huh?
Ah,
I have to tell you about that. Right.
One of the other things that I found in your book is many of your books is that your love for New Orleans comes across in the story. You really capture what the city offers, but you're not afraid to also inform readers about its more negative aspects. Why is it important for you as writers and as people who love New Orleans to show it warts and all?
I think truth is very complex, and everyone's story matters. You know, sometimes we talk to people and they said, oh, I'm not an expert at this, or my voice isn't really important. And then they would have so much information, lived experience and family information and just information about the city. You know, I think that if we don't study the history and learn from mistakes of people who came before us, we're never going to forge a hopeful future. And it's important to us, even though New Orleans is this beautiful town with 14-foot ceilings and oak trees that canopy and streetcar rides that, you know, have been around for ages, there's also some depth and some terrible sins of the past that are pretty humiliating. And they're actually fact. And it's important that we share the past of the city, I think, you know. Warts and all.
Why do you think New Orleans was such a magnet for creative people? Because there was Degas, there was Kate Chopin, there's the number of artists and musicians and people that just flock there. I'm guessing you may have an answer, but why? Why that city?
I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I'm in a hotel and someone keeps trying to get in the door.
That's okay.
Well, New Orleans is a fun town. I mean, even when there's a hurricane, like there's a semi-hurricane going on and people outside screaming and running around. I mean, it's just a fascinating place that you don't really get to see very often because it's full of love. It is full of fun. It's full of mystery and it's full of danger. And all these things together make it a combustion of places to be. I mean, that's all I can say. I've never been any place quite like this, except maybe Paris, but that is so magnificent and bigger that New Orleans is like a little Paris.
May I read something from the for the preface of the book? Okay. So a lot of this writing is mom and I responding to what it's like to live in New Orleans too. So, okay. We have loved and left the city and been haunted to return. It is hard to escape the intoxicating Big Easy, where family woos, warms, and welcomes. How could anyone leave Louisiana? Gumbo, crawfish bisque, crab meat au gratin, jazz parades, dancing in the streets, lavender nights, Creole cottages in popsicle colors, streets lined with mama oak trees, steamboats on the huge, wide Mississippi River, a place where people still sit on their porches and talk into the night, a town where anything difficult should be postponed for family or fun. Don't study too hard. It could mess up your brain. This is real. This is real. We do talk into the night on our porches, on our swings. I have heard that growing up in New Orleans from classmates, you know, don't study too hard. It can mess up your brain. So the idea of the frivolity of the life. And also sometimes people talk about this, scholars like Dr. Yule talk about it, is we are on the precipice of death and in the face of hurricanes so often that we have to celebrate life with Carnival and Mardi Gras and Bourbon Street because life could be gone tomorrow.
Right.
So I think that's part of it in the back of people's minds, you know.
And Carnival was also important back in Kate's day too, if I remember correctly. Her husband was part of is it crew that they call it or something?
Yes, so Carnival had been, and we can refer to C.W. Cannon. He's a New Orleans historian that we talk to very often. There's actually an interview with him in the back of the book. But there, New Orleans had a carnival for several years before. But basically, Carnival was run by these secret, clandestine, all-male, all-white crews. And these men, like these cotton brokers, these wealthy people, met in, you know, smoked their cigars and met in these kind of this elite gentlemen's clubs. And mm-hmm. Edgar Degas was able to actually go to these. This is because his brother and his uncle were members of these clubs. And so, you know, they would meet all year round and they even dabbled in political riots and trying to overthrow the police and the federal occupation points. Pretty terrifying history when we look at that as well. But yeah, these crews also had parades and they'd ride on horses and they'd throw doubloons and they dance with their wives at balls behind masked curtains.
Part of your book,
men's clubs now too. Yeah, that and that time was in the 1870s, only men's clubs. But there are Quite a few women's clubs too, but of course they're expensive. You know, like a membership might cost you $3,000 or $4,000 a year for one night event.
Wow.
Wow.
Part of your book is dedicated to go to different experts and get information on different aspects of Kate's life and her work. And I found that fascinating. How did you decide which experts to approach? And were there certain things that you wanted to bring into your book that they kind of contributed?
I think that we were drawn to what was most fun for us. So we really love fashion. Mom and I love fashion. And, you know, even if you look at the cover of the book, you can see how Kate is dressed in these
She loved
kind
it.
of these corset, these tight-fitting bodices, these long skirts. And we interviewed fashion historians and a costume designer, Hope Hanifin from Films, and said, what was it like to have dressed in this time? How did that restrict movement? And how was that intentional that women weren't really allowed to move very much, you know? And so I think that was really curious for us, was kind of learning more about, you know, if we wanted, we included some scenes from a potential film in the book. If we wanted to capture Kate, we wouldn't describe her necessarily in terms today because she dressed so much different in that, and she loved fashion too. You know, her favorite color was purple, lavender. So we wanted to really make sure that we included pieces that we were curious about, and also things that we hadn't really seen in the literature about Kate Chopin, particularly fashion at the time. Yeah.
The fashion part was fascinating. I really enjoyed that, and I never really thought about it until I was reading your book. But the restrictive nature of women's clothing in the late 19th century, that was because women had to be kept in their place, essentially.
Yes. And there's even account of, you know, after she left Louisiana, she'd go back to the bayou to visit her husband's family. And there was an account of her with short cropped hair, wearing pants.
I
And
mean,
one of the relatives was just so horrified that she shielded her children away from Kate because she didn't want her to poorly influence the youth.
it's a little bit further down the history timeline, but I never really understood why, for a number of years, why Amelia Bloomer was so controversial until I realized that what she was doing was giving women freedom to move about and things like that. One of the other things that was fascinating was Kate's early education because she went to a rather unique convent school, was it?
Sacred Heart, which of course I went to as well. So it's always fun when you find these commonalities. She had been put in a boarding school at an early age because she was kind of a rebel. And then, but fortunately for her father was killed in a train accident. I mean, it was fortunate for her, bad for him. And then she came home and her mother tutored her, and she brought her grandmother over from France and she tutored her. And her great grandmother was there. She had three women from France all tutoring her and her mother, and they sent her back to Sacred Heart for another 14 years because they had money. Her mother, women could not control their money, but widows could. So her mother never remarried, and her husband died away. I think her mother was like 19, but she was smart enough never to remarry. So then they poured all their knowledge and money into the education of this young woman so she could go to Sacred Heart. And really, she got all the advantages of privilege, if you will, of a young man of privilege. And she almost acted like a man, although she was beautiful, you know, marching out on her own to take a walk through the French Quarter, even though women were not allowed to take a walk without a male escort. So she adjusted her clothes so she could walk alone. I mean, all these things that showed a very bold nature.
Yeah, smoking cigars and you know, too, it's not something that ladies weren't allowed to do. But fortunately, her husband, she married Oscar Chopin, who was a son of a French man, and he was actually a lot more lenient than other people, other suitors that she had met before. And she would mimic people, and she was a total jokester, and he loved it. They adored each other, so it was wonderful that she pushed the bounds in a relationship that was supportive of that until things went a little sour on the bayou, when he went bankrupt and got sick.
And the extraordinary thing, she had six children. I mean, and they all survived and they all loved her. And when she died, they were all living with her. I mean, so she managed to do this career thing and also have these children totally. And she did other very clever things. And I think about that for women wanting to write or young men wanting to write. She had a salon at her house every week in which she invited all the sort of smart, intelligent writer poets of the town. So she got to have a huge group of people that knew her and loved her. And she did this every week. I'm thinking how powerful we could be if we kind of emulated that inclusive and outreach that she
Yeah,
did.
that's true.
Clever.
You both did an immense amount of research for the book. What surprised you the most about Kate? She was surprising in so many ways, but what did you learn that you thought, wow, this really is interesting or different, or I never knew?
I think that she was a really regular woman, like so many women I know today. She was brilliant, but at because of the time, she wasn't allowed to show how brilliant she was. And I think some women still are kind of held back by that. But she did things, and she was just brave. She did it even if she was terrified. You know, something in her knew that she would survive all the pains that she experienced. You know, she buried all of her brothers and sisters. You know, she buried her husband. She survived the annihilation of her masterpiece that celebrated 125 years later. You know, I mean, I think when I think about her with short hair and pants, smoking a cigarette with her family in the bayou, she was a really regular, kind of fun person. And she was born at this time, but she's almost you know, she wasn't really allowed to be who she really sensed she could become, but somehow she broke the mold. And I think that's why she's still celebrated now.
I was shocked that she could love two men almost simultaneously. That she had this brilliant, educated French husband, and who also was kind of lusty because when he failed the exams in Paris, he went to a brothel. I don't know what age, at 17, so he was not an inexperienced man. And then this tiger of a man, Albert Sampiché, who, you know, he was always riding around in a stallion. He owned a half of Louisiana. He had no education, couldn't even hardly talk. So she managed to be totally involved with these two simultaneously. And I thought that was really interesting. And keep her children. They all loved her. That while.
Well, she almost lost her children when her husband died,
Yeah, she
too. That
did.
her husband's family fought for
Yeah, the
custody, but
brother
she
wanted to
didn't
take the
claim it
children
all.
away. Yeah, that's true. Good point. All right.
And mom loved writing about the love story. I mean, when we get to chapter 8, I blush. I'm like, Mom, you can't say this. Are we really going to say this?
She said, this. I said, well, this is what the reader reads for. They want to know the real story. Yeah.
She's writing to the market, which is smart. What would you say for someone who's never read Kate or is not familiar with her work? What would you say is her most important legacy to literature?
Boy.
No, I was really calling you.
Oh, the awakening, the
That
awakening.
mean, yes.
No question, the awakening. I mean, there are a few other stories that are pretty wonderful. The storm, which is almost her perfect. You can when you read these things, they're so perfectly written and so combustible. You're like, what? You're just totally there in the presence of her. And so I say the awakening, and maybe the storm, and the story of an hour. Definitely the awakening because she told her truth, and she told the truth for a lot of people.
And Desiree's Baby, I would say Desiree's Baby really stands out too, that story. All these set in, you know, New Orleans or set in Louisiana, many of them.
What was it like working together on this is not your first book project, but as relatives, as family members, do you assign each other certain topics? Do you just kind of coordinate, or do you go your separate ways and hope it comes together in the end?
I
Well,
love mom bought a house. She moved to Phoenix. That made it more less difficult.
Phoenix. Love Phoenix. Love Scottsdale. Yeah. So that was fun. We got to be, I'm still going to go back. We're working together.
I would say my mom is so prolific. I'm running to keep up with her. I mean, the poetry just pours out of her soul. I mean, it's incredible to be inspired by her. And, you know, part of our work is always strategic in planning the structure of the book and the research of doing the interviews and reading the books and finding differing points of view and not choosing one. I think that adds more of the complexity too, because people have different points of view of her life. I guess my favorite memory is my mom has a closet slash office, a closet that was made into an office we called the cloffice. And I would be in there writing in this kind of like haven. And she'd come in and just bring me coffee all day to keep going. And then she'd be in the living room listening to French music or a mass on TV. And then at the end of the day, we share what we're working on, you know, so.
That's fun. Well, I love working with Roy. Roy's the boss, okay? Roy's got a PhD. Roy's working out USC. She's a young boss. And so, because on any project, there has to be one boss. So that was it from the beginning. I know I'm maybe the love boss, but she's the book boss. So if it's undecided, she gets to choose. And that makes it much easier. And we don't really have that most of the time. So, and she's a real scholar. You know, I'm going to go away and give you all the emotion. She's going to say, can we get away with this? I don't know. Let me check that footnote. So it's a good partnership, I think. Yeah. It's wonderful to work with your daughter.
Well, this could be a guesswork on my part, but I'm also thinking that your background in theater, Rosary, helped make the book better in the sense that you kind of see it from a dramatist's point of view, so you can kind of shape the narrative that way.
Yeah, I guess that, and then of course, you know, Roy has a background in the visual arts too, so the visual point of view makes a big difference. You know, you want to have drama, you know, where there's no drama, there's no story.
And I think that's a big part of mom's specialty is the pacing and the action. And she said, where's the conflict? Where's the conflict? Cut, cut. And she mercilessly, like, just cuts things. And I'm like, this is so good, but it's boring. It's dull.
Kill it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoy it. It means a lot to us.
It was wonderful. You mentioned this is the 125th anniversary of Kate's work. Was this just happenstance, or did you plan to write this book now?
We were as stunned to find out it was the 125th anniversary as you are.
Okay.
I read it in the paper.
Wow.
I know, like 2 weeks ago was a feature. We thought, we had no idea. Yeah. That's a big
and anniversary. Literally you know, our book launch first event is taking place in a house on the bayou that is almost exactly like the house that burned down to the ground. I mean, it's almost like the angels, someone, you know, some spirits were at play to make this happen, to help bring her life to light, you know, again now. But we didn't know when we were writing it. We knew she, you know, was published in 1899. We knew we were going to, you know, publish our book in 2024. But yeah.
Sometimes life just works that way.
It's so great.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Before we run out of time, is there ways people can find out more about your books and you? Do you have websites? Are you on social media? How can they connect with you?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Rory.Schmidt. And I have Rory Schmidt, O'Neillschmidt.com is my website. And then Arcadia Publishing is our publisher. And there's more information there. Mom, your website, do you want to share?
RosaryO'Neill.com. Yeah, and has all my books and books with Rory, which are the latest and the best.
There you go. I just can't believe how quickly time has flown by. I just am so thrilled to have Rory and Rosary here. Their books not only entertain but educate, which is a wonderful combination. And I can't wait now. You have to write fast. Thank you so much for taking time and sharing your thoughts and insight about your new book, Kate Chopin in New Orleans. It's out now. Look for it in your favorite bookstore at the Poison Pen or check your local library.
Thank you so much for the honor.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We love the Poison Pen. Thank you.
We'll see you soon in Phoenix.
Please.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.